Hello and welcome to the Hotchkiss & Wiley Q1 2021 High Yield Market Update. My name is John Hossie and I am joined today by Mark Hudoff, Portfolio Manager on the High Yield Strategy. Today, we will be providing an update on performance during the first quarter of 2021 and a review of the high yield market more generally. Before we begin, a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of April 14, 2021. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, Hotchkiss & Wiley reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. So, Mark, the past 12 months proved to be quite remarkable. Maybe you can start by providing some perspective on how the past year paved the way for much stronger performance for your strategy during the first quarter of 2021.
Sure, John. So 2020 was really a remarkable year. I mean, it goes kind of without saying with the pandemic, but in terms of the volatility, it brought about, you know, both difficult investing period and also some opportunities, but you had to be patient. And I think that's the bottom line is patience. In the first quarter, we get the shock, the COVID shock, we get the economy kind of collapsing, we get treasuries starting to collapse as well. But then the Fed comes in with massive, unambiguous stimulus package, a second round with staggering quantitative easing. Then the fiscal policy comes in with nearly $2 trillion in stimulus over a short period of time. We ended the year in the broad market, 2020 starts at spreads just under 400 basis points. And by late March, kind of at the depth of the COVID uncertainty, you know, we've backed up to nearly 1,100 in the broad market. And I'll get to this later. Small caps actually were much more brutalized by the COVID downdraft in the economy. I mean, we went from the beginning of the year a little over 500 off to 13, almost 1,400 off. I mean, just stunning in a matter of a month. After these backstopping and stimulus programs come in, I mean, we see just a unprecedented rally. And it was really interesting because it wasn't equal in terms of the larger, broader market and the small cap market, which we were particularly sensitive to. Broad spreads retraced by June nearly 500 basis points, ending with something around 600. Small caps, on the other hand, tightened about 400 basis points to 900 off. That was one of the key features of generating the returns we did on a one-year basis and even into the first quarter of this year, was holding tight on the small cap names that we really had a lot of conviction in, using the unprecedented issuance calendar. And that was for a lot of reasons. I mean, one of the reasons was treasuries, but the main reason was people hoarding cash, trying to build fortress balance sheets by putting new issues into the market to build cash balances so they could sustain what was a kind of an uncertain outlook. But using that calendar to add to positions at new rates in names that we had a lot of conviction in, small, medium, and large cap. And then also the downdraft created a lot of volatility from the rating agency point of view. So we started to see a lot of fallen angels. I mean, there was, over the full balance of the year, $238 billion flowed into our market from fallen angels. That is the largest ever. That works out to be over 20% of the high yield market was now entered through the investment grade channel. So using the calendar and sticking to the positions we had a lot of conviction in, the second opportunity in 2020 that presented itself was the closing trades and what became known as kind of the reopening trades. I mean, the pandemic and the downdraft in the economy offered some opportunities, you know, staples and steady as you go companies, utilities and things like that, and large tech companies and broadband companies, all the things that kind of supported consumers that had retreated into their households. We saw those credits do well. We saw leisure companies, transport companies, particularly airlines. We saw gaming companies all really take a pounding. And so the second opportunity was to survey the landscape and, using the calendar or secondary market, pick ideas that we thought had some resiliency going into 2021 on a reopening, but offered from an asset coverage point of view, downside protection, even if we were wrong. Because I can tell you in the depth of the COVID downdraft, I mean, it was really hard to have a lot of conviction that this was going to get turned around as quickly as it did. So 2020 was about conviction and picking your shots and setting up for a kind of a reopening trade. And I think that was the key to what we did in 2020.
Thanks, Mark. Now, you mentioned spreads. Can you talk a little bit about any portfolio changes you've made of late, given the continued spread compression we've seen so far this year?
Yeah, sure. So over the arc of the first quarter, yields are tighter by about 40 basis points. OAS is actually much tighter than that over the period of time for the broad market. We actually added to the portfolio some names just to kind of diversify. So in the first quarter, functionally, what we did is we harvested some of the reopening trades that had run a long ways. Maybe they were kind of on the bubble credits. I can think of some refining names, for instance. In the energy space, unusually, as a reopening trade, I mean, when driving collapsed, refining spreads became very, very uneconomic for refiners. They have to run full out in order for them to cover the fixed costs. And so they were just running unprofitably throughout two-thirds of 2020. And as the reopening started to materialize, particularly after the vaccine gets validated and introduced into the populace in the fourth quarter and into the first quarter, you know, the spreads started to normalize. And the market was ahead of it. So, you know, we've been harvesting some of the reopening ideas that we picked up through the balance of 2020. Fallen Angels was one thing. We've been kind of selling. Things have gotten a lot tighter, particularly some of the big EMP names that came into the market to bolster their liquidity with the corresponding decline in treasuries and the gap down in the economy and WTI's fall. There was a lot of pressure in the oil and gas space. Those were names that we started to harvest. So harvesting IG was something that took place in the quarter. I mean, we started the quarter with about 9% in investment grade. We went down to about 5.6 by the end of the quarter. That's considerably higher. We were almost neutral with the benchmark at the beginning of the year, and now we're considerably under investment grade. I mean, in the case of double Bs, you know, we added a little as treasuries backed up into the bulk of the first quarter. And so that was something we did. And we did that based on ideas that came into the calendar, particularly in the midstream space. There was a bit of a rotation in our portfolio. As we saw kind of the small cap E&Ps, which had been just destroyed in the first half of 2020, they came back, maybe not all the way, but they came back a long ways. And we had been underweight midstream assets in the energy space. And there were some double B midstream names that we were able to add to. Same thing with single Bs. That's a natural habitat for us, but we've actually used the issuance calendar and added about, you know, almost as much as 3% to that. So harvesting a little over 3% in the investment grade space, redeploying that in double Bs and single Bs. And the other area where we've done a lot of harvesting is, I mean, we started at the beginning of the year at almost 9% triple Cs. And by the end of the first quarter, we were down to 6%. So a combination of selling kind of expensive names or names that really rallied and then high grade spite of or kind of at the wings of the portfolio, both in high quality and low quality, gave us enough liquidity. And we redeployed that kind of in the belly of the high yield market. The other thing we did do is, and this is something that we've seen historically as a very robust strategy, and that's putting money to work in the secured part of the high yield market. 2020 saw this massive issuance pattern, over $440 billion in issuance. And we saw a surge in first lien, particularly in travel and leisure paper. We bought a lot of that paper. As I said, some of it fell into the category of investment grade and particularly the airlines. We've harvested some of that, but we've also seen a lot of first lien structures come out of the in single Bs and double Bs and in new issues, and we've been buying those. So we've been adding to the secured part of our portfolio. I think the last part is duration. We entered the year very underweight duration, and we added a little duration to the portfolio. We're still well under in terms of duration relative to the benchmark. But the overall high yield market, the duration extended part of it through new issuance in the first quarter, part of just the math on interest rates. We've added as much as almost 0.2 years to that. We still are very long the classic parts of our portfolio, basic industry. We added a little to that in the first quarter. We cut a little of the energy, but it was really a rotation, as I mentioned before. Leisure, we sold basically some cruise line bonds and things like that that have gotten a lot tighter, and we're still well overweight that, and we think there's still room to run. Healthcare, we were underweight going into the year, and we've actually been adding to healthcare. Healthcare actually underperformed, and so that ended up being a pretty positive trade for us. To round that out, transports, still an overweight. That is something that, you know, centers more in the airlines for sure, and that has really rallied. I'd say the last part is we did add a little bit to retail. That's a classic reopening where bricks and mortar access is going to be more widespread. So we think that that offers an opportunity as well. So those are kind of the changes that took place over the quarter. It kind of comports pretty closely to performance. Over a one-year period of time, I mean, we've had very good results, beating the benchmark on a one-year basis very substantially. The engine of that is the lower quality part of the portfolio. Single B's and triple C's, even though double B's actually did pretty well for us as well. And then the sectors that added a lot of value, energy, that comeback in the E&P trade, media, that was really more credit selection than anything else. The underweight in healthcare was really helpful. In comparative terms, pretty equal contributions by capital goods, retail, and leisure. Really, the only notable area that was a little bit weaker was in basic industry, and that centered on a couple things, but in particular, the metals and mining area. In the first quarter, there's a little bit of retracement of the valuations in that space. Some of our exposures in the recycling space, and it's really, really sensitive to where scrap prices are, and for a lot of reasons, it hasn't been that robust.
So, Mark, you mentioned the strength of new issuance, and we saw a record $65 billion come in March alone. What's been the source of all the recent new issuance, and can this trend continue? Can companies continue to keep building up their balance sheets like this?
There's really a couple factors that are driving the new issuance calendar. At a macro level, issuers are worried about inflation coming up eventually. The unprecedented amount of stimulus and easy money and the new monetary philosophy, they all contribute to some concerns about inflation. So issuers across the board have been terming out debt. So that's one thing. That can continue, but it really depends kind of on how things go into the year. I think the second form is we are starting to see the usual suspects arrive at the party. LBO activity is picking up. That's historically a source of a lot of activity. And we're definitely seeing funding of that coming to the marketplace. There's also some volatility in 2020 in the bank loan market, and issuers really, really turned their attention. It goes part and parcel with inflation, but turned their attention to the fixed coupon market rather than the bank loan market. And the bank loan market conditions with CLOs taking kind of a holiday in new issuance in the early part of 2020 and into the back end of 2020. So at a macro level, you're seeing it. At a micro level, you're seeing it for reasons that we're familiar with historically. Can it continue? I mean, not at the breakneck pace that we saw in 2020. Part of that was deploying cash to the balance sheet. I think the opposite is taking place now. Special dividends, buying back stock, M&A with those cash balances. We're going to see that in 2021. And I think we're going to get a good calendar this year, but I think it's going to be much closer to more of an average calendar than that eye-popping mid $400 billion kind of calendar we saw last year.
Thanks, Mark. You mentioned bank loans. Have you become more constructive on the bank loan segment of late?
Well, you know, we're short duration relative to the index, and bank debt is actually a nice instrument to kind of shield yourself from the effects of inflation or treasuries. The fact is that it really comes down to the opportunity set. LIBOR plus 300 with a zero floor is a 3% kind of high yield structure. And that's not too interesting for us. If you get into single Bs in the smaller cap space, it becomes more interesting because then you start to see LIBOR plus 400, maybe with some kind of floor. That starts to become more competitive with fixed rate high yield bonds. I mean, we're seeing single Bs this week in the new issue market regularly printing with the mid fours. And so there's a little bit of trade-off between duration and carry. Bank dens don't offer very much carry. So I guess on balance, our preference is to stick with bond market ideas because our own structurally, we're in pretty good shape. We have a considerable bank loan position on, but we're discriminating. And I guess if I were to kind of consolidate it down, if I can get a small cap loan where I'm getting better than what I would face in the coupon market for a similar, maybe not the exact same, similar kind of company, I would definitely buy a bank loan. You're giving up some liquidity. And so we're not avoiding bank loans by any means, but it all comes down to relative value.
So turning to the high yield market more broadly, valuations aren't quite as attractive today, but we still remain fairly constructive on fundamentals and technicals. Can you talk more about current fundamental and technical indicators that you follow and what those look like?
Yeah, on a fundamental basis, as long as the Fed keeps rates as zero at the front end of the curve, and all indications are they're going to do that for the foreseeable future, that's a huge stimulus to the economy. It creates a steep curve that benefits banks and benefits a lot of people, the issuers less so, but that's a very powerful wind at our back and the back of the economy. Large swaths of the stimulus hasn't even been spent yet, and there's debate going on right now about even a larger chunk of stimulus coming into the market. That will all be supportive of the economy. And so you get, you know, very benign, very supportive Fed program, oodles of money from the government, and just the natural math of going from a hugely troughing economy to a rapidly accelerating economy. I mean, the fundamentals just don't get much better than this, at least through 2021. Now, when the Fed starts to take their foot off the gas and start to rotate towards the brakes, that's going to be an issue. When someone starts to decide that they need to think about fiscal restraint, or at least the debt balances of the federal government, if that ever happens, that's going to be another consideration. But I think those are way out in 2022. I think the fundamentals kind of trump everything else. We've seen that in defaults. Defaults got into the mid sixes by year end 2020. Now, I mean, they're falling off a cliff. They've come in 200 basis points, more than 200 basis points in the first quarter of the year. JP Morgan is forecasting default rates going from four handle to two handle by year end. So you got collapsing risk at the bottom of the market. You have very low interest rates, very low tight spreads, translates into very low cost of capital for companies, big cash balances that they can deploy. Fundamentally, it's just tough to really point at anything and be concerned about it. I mean, the technicals, the old adage, it's, never fight the Fed. I mean, I think it really is at play right now. You know, we're starting to see upgrades move towards outpacing downgrades. That kind of lagged effect is in play. So we're going to start to see a rotation from credit migration downward to credit migration upward. That's going to be fallen angels are going to become rising stars, maybe not exactly the same credit, but we're going to see some positive activity there. And I think the new issuance calendar is not going to swamp the market. I think it's going to price to demand. And I think that technically also the high yield market, given where spreads are, even looking at spreads in the high yield market, and yeah, they're not great, but they do offer considerable compensation. At 400 off for small caps and a little over 300 off for the broad market, I mean, that's more than you get on a 10-year investment grade bond. And so I think from a relative value point of view, lower duration, much better current yield, and compensation, given the backdrop of fundamentals, makes, you know, risk-adjusted high yield still looks relatively attractive to alternatives. And against the backdrop of a potential inflation, I think it looks very attractive relative to other corporate instruments. And bank debt certainly fits in that area. It's just there's no total return in bank debt, and you still have that opportunity in the fixed rate market.
Well, Mark, I think that's a perfect place to conclude our podcast this quarter. I want to thank you again for being such a great guest, and I want to thank our audience for their interest in the Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield Strategy. For further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926.